The Tom Woods Show, episode 580.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Is email driving you crazy and taking over your life? Do you feel like you can never possibly get and stay caught up? Well, here's my secret weapon. SaneBox.com/Woods. That's SaneBox.com/Woods. Bloggers don't leave money on the table. Learn how to earn an income stream from that blog by checking out Yaro Starek's live webinar, Thursday, January 28th, 2016, at TomWoods.com/blog webinar. And if you missed it, check out his highly successful mastermind program that'll be closing its doors to new people in just a few days. Check it out at TomWoods.com/mastermind. Hello, everybody. Better late than never. I wanted to talk today about something that happened last week, and it's the National Review response to the Donald Trump candidacy. National Review, as I assume most of you know, but maybe you youngsters don't, has really been the flagship publication of American conservatism since the mid-1950s. When the Weekly Standard was started back in, actually, I don't remember when it was, maybe 1990s or so? I actually can't remember. But that and the American Spectator have been competitors to National Review, but National Review is the one that people associate with conservatism because it goes back really to the beginning, to when American conservatism really got formed after World War II. And they put together an issue. It's a symposium consisting of a couple of dozen writers who are all explaining why conservatives should not support Donald Trump. So I found this very interesting given that they did not respond this way to Mitt Romney or John McCain, who are different from Trump, it's true, and have their own problems, but they all have problems. But why is this one so much worse than the others? It's interesting. I think it's an interesting response by National Review, and I want to figure out what it all means. So to do that, I invited Jack Kerwick to come join us because he has a column on townhall.com, and it's on this Donald Trump phenomenon, but specifically on the National Review response. So he wrote a column about the National Review response. And given that this has gotten a lot of discussion all over the country and all throughout the media, I thought we should do an episode on it right here. Jack Kerwick holds a PhD in philosophy from Temple University and is widely published. Town Hall is just one of his many outlets. He's the author of the new book, The American Offensive: Essays from the Front. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
I had to have you on when I heard from Paul Gottfried that you'd written this particular column. Paul's been a guest on the show several times. He is a tough critic. So if Paul likes somebody's column, then it's pretty darn good. And it's an interesting column. It's your column. I was just telling people it's going to be linked to TomWoods.com/580. It's about the National Review response to Donald Trump. It's a symposium, really, and it's called Against Trump. It says that on the cover. They've got a lot of their contributors on there, and they're just going after him. They're saying he's not a real conservative, and we basically are the lodestar of conservatism, and it was that style of attack. And I want to talk about your response to this. What I find interesting about it is that, and extremely revealing, is that National Review did not publish anything like this in 2012 against Mitt Romney. They did not publish anything like this in 2008 against John McCain. I'm sure they had a columnist here and there wringing his hands about, oh, they're not going to be conservative enough. Yeah, we probably got a little crybaby stuff like that. But then we got the usual shove it down your throat. You've got to take this guy, you got to live with Mitt Romney. You're going to be perfectly happy because without Mitt Romney, we're going to lose the country and so on and on. We'd never got an attack on the scale that they've just done to Trump. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, no. I want to make it clear, too, that, you know, I wasn't out to defend Trump as much as I'm.
No.
As much as I was just stunned by the hypocrisy and the just seemed to me just self-opportunism of these self-declared conservatives of National Review. Yeah, I do have some ideas as to why they have such a problem with Trump. And there's different theories out there. I think, for one, you know, this whole notion that Trump is not really a conservative, he's socially liberal. Well, if you look at his record, I think the case can be made for that. But they weren't troubled by endorsing other socially liberal Republican candidates. Okay, Trump was in favor of gay marriage, supposedly. Well, today, these same people are telling us, hey, the Supreme Court settled the issue. You know, move on, right?
Let me jump in on that, because the neocons have repeatedly said, look, you lost on that issue. Get over it. We're going to move on. We don't want to dwell on it.
That's
so
correct.
All of a sudden, they do want to dwell on it? Make up your mind.
Yeah, exactly right. And when it comes to, Trump's position on abortion, again, this is another piece of just glaring hypocrisy here. Remember, a lot of these people were in favor of Rudy Giuliani some years ago. Rudy Giuliani was avowedly pro-choice. Mitt Romney was for abortion before he was against it, and then for it again before he was against it. And not to mention, you know, given their attitude toward gay marriage, Supreme Court settled it, move on. Well, the Supreme Court settled abortion decades ago. And so, you know, what do they expect to gain by saying that this candidate's pro-life? What are these people actually doing? They've been funding Planned Parenthood for years and years. And this was under, George W. Bush and his Republican Congress. It's just that the hypocrisy is just all over the place. I think, and believe it or not, Tom, the other night I saw a clip of Chris Matthews' show, and
down Chris Matthews just this second to ask you about that. Talk about that.
Okay, yeah, no, I just saw the clip. I don't watch the guy's show, but someone sent me the clip, and he had this young woman from National Review, and I'd never heard of her before, and she really seemed to be out of her league to me. And that's saying something.
Awful. She did a terrible job.
I thought she did an awful job. And I mean, that's really saying something to be out of your league dealing with someone like Chris Matthews, too. but here, Chris Matthews said, can you name one contributor to this symposium who didn't favor the war in Iraq? Okay. Now, she says, oh, yeah, but there are lots of people there who came to regret it. Well, but then she couldn't name one. And he said there, name one. She couldn't do it. Now, it is
she
true.
She said Ted Cruz. She said Ted Cruz. Okay, but he's not even in the symposium.
Right. That's right. She did mention Ted Cruz, right. But he meant name one contributor to this symposium who's not a hawk. Who's not a hawk. Okay. She couldn't do it. And it's true that while people like Glenn Beck have come to regret I've come to see the error of their ways in supporting the war in Iraq. The fact of the matter is they supported it, and they were enthusiastic supporters of that war for years until things started really turning south. I think, yes, in part it's the fact that Trump did not support the Iraq war that has them bothered, but I think that's also indicative of a larger foreign policy vision on his part. Because whereas Trump Trump poses a problem for guys like you and I, I'm sure. He's not very articulate, and you're not really certain whether he has anything worked out that well. But he has made some remarks regarding foreign policy, like complimentary remarks toward Putin, for example. He's been angry about the fact that we weren't compensated by going into Iraq. That if we had to go in, which he opposed, we shouldn't. I think in no small part, the neocons, and that's what they are, right? You know, the neoconservatives are running the show at National Review. They hold the levers of power and influence at Fox News. I think the neoconservatives are a bit scared by Trump's foreign policy vision. They're not worried that he's going to behave recklessly. They're worried about quote unquote isolationism, and so I think to no small extent I think that could account for why they dislike him. They also don't like him because they're worried that he's going to damage the Republican Party brand. I mean, you know, the Republicans are insistent that if only we put up nicer and nicer candidates, you know, the Democrats are going to like us, the moderates are going to gravitate toward us. We're going to be able to immunize ourselves against these charges that the Democrats and the left have been leveling against us for years, in charges of being racist and sexist and so forth. You know, that's self-delusional in itself to think that there's anything they can do. But so I do think they're also worried that Trump's style is going to, and also they can't buy him. They've already pissed him off. They know that this guy keeps an enemies list. He's not going to forget what they've said about him afterwards. And finally, Tom, I think the fact that their candidate, say Jeb Bush, you know, he was the candidate initially, the fact that this guy has had millions of dollars spent through super PACs to support him and is hovering in the single digits right now. Marco Rubio also isn't exactly tearing anything up. I think they're also worried that, hey, you know, this could spell their own demise. People aren't buying what they're selling now.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Yeah, let me jump in on that. Now, Bush, there's one poll that just came out that has him in Iowa at 1%. I mean, that's laughable. Wow. That's unbelievable. All the way down to 1%. Now, there's another poll that has him around 4%, but there's a reputable poll. I don't remember the polling agency, but it's a reputable agency that has him at 1%. So it's really, really bad. I want to amplify a couple of things you said. He also, Trump, said that Ukraine is none of our business. Like, what in the heck reason would we have to get involved there? So, I'm so tired of libertarians who say, I actually had somebody, by the way, who was a donor of mine, a small donor. Mm-hmm. But so, in other words, somebody who listens, I think, carefully to me and concluded that I was endorsing Trump and calling on people to vote for him just by simply saying, you know, the guy has said some things on foreign policy that I wish more people would say. I devoted an episode of my show to talk about the problems I have with Trump and the concerns that I have about him. But I'm glad somebody – I don't care who – why should I care who it is? I'm glad somebody is saying these things about Ukraine, about Syria. Now, on the other hand, he can be a real hawk sometimes too.
Yes, he can.
But anyway, the point is – he's said these things. Now, the other thing I think I want to add into this picture as to why they don't like him is he does not show the proper obeisance to the official conservative movement. He doesn't seem to care about their overpaid think tanks that haven't accomplished anything. He doesn't care about their magazines. He doesn't care about their talking heads. And these people live on their own sense of self-importance. And he is crapping all over that. And they are screaming and yelling. And what it reminds me of is, you know, there are very few episodes in my life or in life in general that can't be amply illustrated by an episode of The Simpsons. And there's a Simpsons episode where Homer has this tremendous alcoholic drink, and Moe the bartender copies it and starts selling it to everybody. And Homer is really upset that he's not getting any of the credit. So he says, Moe, you know, you just lost yourself a customer. But Moe can't hear him over the clamor of the thousands of people shouting for that drink. So poor Homer's saying, you just lost yourself a customer, and Moe can't even hear him. In that case, Homer is National Review. Hey, wait a minute. We 37 intellectuals don't like you, and no one can hear them, and it drives them crazy.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it.
Oh, I think so, too. And in fact, yesterday I was listening to, I don't know if you've ever heard of Dennis Prager, if you know who he is.
Oh, I've been on his show, yep.
Oh, you've been on his show, okay.
Yeah. Once I was not invited back, but I have been on.
Well, you know, Tom, I remember years ago before I even started getting into the writing and this kind of thing, I remember hearing you on Michael Medved's show.
Oh, yeah. I've been on there. Yeah.
And Medved, well, he's a colleague of Prager's. They're both on the Salem Radio Network. And Medved was also one of the contributors to this symposium in National Review, which came as no surprise to me. But I heard Prager, you know, in just exasperated yesterday, saying it doesn't matter what Trump says, because he's no Trump supporter at all. It doesn't matter. And it's frustrating these people that Trump is allowed to get away with saying as much as he has. I mean, if you remember back when he made that remark about John McCain, you had I think it was a National Review writer then came out. His Trump's campaign is toast. That's it.
I know.
He's
I
done.
Love that.
and I'm thinking, do you really think that you have a bunch of people out there that are big fans of John McCain?
Of John McCain. See how out of it they are? They think that if you criticize
really
St. John McCain, your life is over.
Well, you know, and here at Prager and these guys, you always talk about how the left lives in this hermetically sealed bubble. But yet yet the neoconservatives do as well. They are self-delusional. They really are disconnected from the events on the ground, from what's actually going on. They live in their own bubble. I mean, to think that 22 people from National Review can come out against Trump and that's somehow going to hurt him, it just baffles. I said immediately, this is going to boost his esteem in a lot of people's eyes.
Yeah, because people are going to say, oh, gee, the pointy heads don't like him. Well, isn't that exactly what I would expect? It plays right into his narrative. It's so dumb the way they did it.
It really
it
was
so sledgehammer.
Move. Yeah, you know, and a good friend of mine came out and said to me, my friend said, if the GOP establishment was really smart, what they would do is get McCain and Lindsey Graham to come out and endorse Trump.
Yeah.
That would be a smart move to make.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but instead, Graham comes out and endorses Jeb Bush. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, really, really. I mean, could there be a less consequential event than the official endorsement of one loser by another loser? Ridiculous. You've got a quotation in here from Glenn Beck's piece saying that Trump is no conservative because he supported the stimulus, the auto bailouts, and the bank bailouts. Now, to me, that is horrifying. And, of course, the whole Tea Party did get started over their opposition to TARP and the bailouts. So to suddenly say, well, that doesn't really matter because at least he tells it like it is somewhat problematic to me. But how do you handle that here in the column?
Well, all I say, listen, George W. Bush was the one who got this ball rolling with the big bank bailouts. John McCain, also, if you remember, back in October of 2008, McCain claimed to be suspending his presidential campaign so he could go back to Washington and they can iron out, you know, they can find a way to resolve this financial crisis. And McCain signed on to the bank bailouts. But my whole point is that Glenn Beck, even though he didn't like McCain, he was endorsing McCain, and he was doing so on the grounds that, well, McCain had this great running mate, Sarah Palin. Okay. And then McCain later on signed on to the auto bailouts. And even back in 2008, earlier on in the year, in February of 2008, McCain revealed his own stimulus plan, but Beck had endorsed him. National Review endorsed them, right? Michael Medved was an enthusiastic supporter of McCain. I mean, he was more enthusiastic supporter of McCain than was McCain. The fact that you know Trump supported these things, yeah. Like I said, in none of my writings do I ever intend to defend Trump. In fact, I even published one article months ago noting that Trump has no record of conservatism. In my judgment, you know, people should be suspicious of him. But again, my key objective here is just to unveil just the really scandalous degree of phoniness and hypocrisy on the part of these Trump critics.
Yeah, of how outraged they are at his opinions. When McCain, on top of all the existing interventions at the time of the housing collapse, he wanted to spend an extra $300 billion to buy up bad mortgages.
He said that during the debate. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. And he said, this isn't George Bush's plan. This is my plan. And they wrung their hands. Oh, John McCain. But there was nothing like this. So my sense also is that they feel like McCain would be predictable because he's basically a dolt, right? He graduated the bottom of his class. You know,
right.
he has the IQ of a tricycle, so they don't have to worry about him. He'll be controlled and bought, and nobody has to worry. Whereas Trump, he may do some things National Review likes. He probably do more things National Review likes than things that I like.
Yeah,
but
right.
They can't be sure of that.
Right.
They'd rather him, you know, a bird in the hand.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. All right, there's a lot more I want to talk about here because I also want to talk about the Sam Francis analysis and stuff like that. But before we do that, let me pause for a quick message. All right, I want you to close your eyes and think about your email inbox. I want you to think about how much email is in there and how much more keeps getting added every day. Is this a thought that gives you serenity or is it a thought that makes you insane? Here is the exact strategy I used to dig myself out of the hole of email insanity. It's called SaneBox, and I've trained it to put all my unimportant emails automatically in another folder so I can scan them in about 10 seconds instead of being bothered by them all day long. Or if I never want to hear from somebody or some newsletter or whatever again, I put it in the Sane Black Hole folder. Never hear from them again. If I want something to come back to me tomorrow morning, I put it in the Sane Tomorrow folder. Boom, comes back to me tomorrow morning. I can tell it I'd like it to come to me 3 days and 4 hours from now because I'll be able to answer it then. All these features and more have made my life so much easier. At the end of the day, I am at inbox zero every single day. For your own mental health's sake, check it out for free at SaneBox, that's S-A-N-E-B-O-X, SaneBox.com/Woods. And if you do decide you'd like to have it for good, signing up through that link will automatically get you a $25 Tom Woods Show credit toward a subscription. As Dan Quayle once said, what a terrible thing it is to lose one's mind. Don't lose it over email. Check out SaneBox.com/Woods. All right, I want to raise with you a concept that was developed by a guy named Sam Francis. That name is probably familiar to you,
Yes. Maybe
familiar to some of my listeners, and more so because his name has come up over the past few weeks because he's been resurrected. And because his analysis is so useful in understanding the Trump phenomenon. People say, huh, isn't that funny? This obscure conservative writer seemed to predict this. Well, first of all, the only reason he was obscure, he was a newspaper columnist syndicated across the country. The only reason he was obscure is the neocons destroyed him
right. And
pushed him into obscurity. I love how they say, hey, you know, congratulate us, everybody. We found this obscure guy. Yeah, the guy whose face you crushed under your boot. Yeah, you found him?
I know.
Well, anyway, with the boot print on his face. Well, anyway, what he was arguing back in the 90s, and I remember reading him at the time, and feeling like the analysis was right, but it wasn't corresponding to reality. He was arguing that what you have out there in the heartland are a lot of what he called MARs, Middle American Radicals,
Yep. People
who are not really ideological, who really don't care who's a real conservative or a real this or that. They don't think that way.
Right.
What they think about are pocketbook issues, and they think about things like American sovereignty. They think about free trade and protectionism. They think about America first type issues. They think about their own particular well-being. They don't think about abstract principles. And they are going to respond to a candidate who says, the politicians have totally sold you out with their abstract theorizing, and what I'm going to do is implement policies aimed at improving the material standard of living of the middle class. And that is what these people, and these are anti-multicultural people by and large, and they're going to respond to that. And Trump has tapped into that. And meanwhile, National Review, tone deaf as always, is saying, and I'm not saying it's great that this phenomenon exists. I'm saying it exists.
Right.
The National Review people, tone deaf as always, are responding by saying, but he's not a real conservative, and they can't understand why that doesn't stick. It doesn't stick because these people don't care about that.
That's right. Yeah, I was going to say, not only do these people not care about whether Trump's a real conservative, because there are still a lot of people who are Trump supporters who still self-identify as conservative, what they've seen is not only, 8 years of Barack Obama, but also what they've seen is those people who are carrying the conservative label have really given it a bad name, right? I mean, they call them rhinos. I have my own problems with that term just because I think it presupposes that a real Republican is a conservative. And I just think that's a wrong presupposition. But these same people, what they've seen is, listen, you people at National Review on Fox News, you continually support the Republicans. The Republicans have regained the Congress now, or at least regained the House back in 2010, Senate 2014, and nothing has really changed.
Yeah.
Right. And then they can think back to George W. Bush, Republican control then. Everyone recognizes the mess that Bush made of things. So it's like, anymore, what does conservative mean?
I think that's exactly what's going on, particularly, as you say, among people who do call themselves conservatives.
Yeah.
People say, I cannot understand why you would possibly be supporting Trump. It isn't that they say, well, I've looked at his platform, because he doesn't really have one.
No,
it's their thinking is, how could it be worse that the people you people have put up have been horrible. They have accelerated every bad trend in the country. How could it be worse to have a guy who basically just has a kind of pragmatic philosophy? And by the way, I can't stand a pragmatic philosophy because his view of eminent domain is, well, we needed to build the roads. There's no depth there. You know, it's very frustrating. But my point is, I can understand why somebody says a machine that has given us Dole, Bush, McCain, and Romney is not in a position to lecture us about our support for Trump. And so we're partly supporting Trump as a way of saying, sticking it in their faces and saying, it's not going to happen that way anymore. We've decided you wanted to give us Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio, and we've decided that's not happening. It is the most stunning rebuke of the conservative movement that I've ever seen. Now, I wish it were in the form of a Ron Paul being the stunning rebuke to these people. That would be more emotionally and intellectually satisfying to me.
Me too.
But it is very interesting to me as an observer to see that this is a revolt against everything, even against the columnists who may really be conservatives and who may actually believe in the free market and so on and so forth. These are the people who would sell out their own grandmothers to be on the right side of an election, to make sure that they are endorsing Ron Romney, even with reservations, none of which ever amount to a hill of beans.
Absolutely. No, I agree. And I agree with every word you just said, especially how, you know, this is a standing repudiation, really, of people are calling it the GOP establishment. I just refer to it as neoconservatism. And, you know, and I've made this point in past articles, too. Now, for all this talk of the establishment, I said, in reality, what we really have are just competing factions within one establishment. There are neoconservatives, and then there are other degrees of neoconservatism. That's what's going on. Like, I consider Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, these guys, they're neocons, too, but just of lighter shades. I think they're just shades of neoconservatism. Because, you know, they are huge supporters of the war in Iraq, still do support that war in Iraq. You know, they supported Bush enthusiastically. I mean, Sean Hannity, if you recall, along with Michael Medved and some other radio hosts, were regularly invited to the White House to interview Bush there. I mean, so, you know, for me, you know, I don't let these guys forget their own track record. They were as much a part of this problem as anyone. They contributed to it, and I think with the whole Trump phenomenon now, it really is a standing repudiation on the part of people who otherwise have felt like they had been bamboozled by the Republican Party in the past to finally say no more. And if that means Trump's going to do some stuff along the way that we don't like, so be it. But you know, if it's going to get under your skin to that bad, and it can't be any worse than what we've already had, it'd be an improvement.
Yeah, I am concerned that his personal style is such that he would be likely, like Teddy Roosevelt, to just override other power centers, to override the legislature and whatever, and just enforce his will. But then I think, well, have these people? I mean, and that's one of my main concerns, and I've talked about that on my show. But at the same time, it's not like other presidents have been scrupulously observant of the separation of powers. I mean, I think there's a Trump derangement syndrome that causes people to forget the actual experiences we're having now, which involve people doing exactly the things we fear Trump might do. So we have to bear in mind your expectations had to be extremely low here. Now, you wrote this column. Again, it's going to be linked. It's linked at the show notes page, tomwoods.com/580. You wrote it at Town Hall. And now, Town Hall is a fairly mainstream right of center news site. And yet you lobbed a hand grenade at National Review, the flagship publication of the conservative movement. How do you think you got away with that?
Well, you know, and one of the editors at Town Hall, she's a news editor, though. She was one of the contributors to the symposium. Her name's Katie Pavlich.
Oh, well, how about that? Well, then I really credit Town Hall for publishing your column.
I do, too. I don't know. I've managed to get, and I've been, you know, writing them, and I freelance write. It's not like I'm on a payroll or anything, you know. But I managed to get a lot of columns accepted there, and I've been doing this with them for the last couple of years. And I'm not sure how it happens, actually. You know, to be real honest with you, you know, I'm very grateful for the fact that I am able to showcase my work there, because they do have a lot of readers, and you know, and like I say, it is a GOP friendly outfit.
Yeah,
But yeah, I can't explain it, but for whatever reasons, I've been told before that they appreciate my perspective.
Okay.
So maybe that explains it.
All right. Well, I'll take that. I'll take that.
Yeah, I'll take it too.
Do you come up with the headline, the title for the column, or does the editor do that?
Usually I do, but I just have to make sure I submit it. If not, they'll put something there. But
okay, yeah, because I don't want to. I never want to blame, because I know half the time people come up with titles for me,
yeah,
and then half the comments are about how stupid the title is. Well, I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But your column is called "Hey National Review, What's Conservatism?" Let's finish up by having you account for that title for the column. What are you driving at with that?
Well, what I think what I'm trying to drive at with that is that I don't believe that the contributors to National Review really know the first thing about what conservatism traditionally, historically, has meant. You know, Russell Kirk, for example, was, you know, his name was on the masthead of National Review when Buckley first launched the magazine. Buckley implored Kirk to get involved. Buckley had said that without Kirk's labors, it's inconceivable that there ever would have been a conservative movement in America. So he really credited Kirk with you know, almost single-handedly fashioning this conservative movement. Now, that's an overstatement, but, you know, he Kirk influenced him greatly. But Kirk was a Burkean, and you know, as a Burkean, you know, Kirk just disavowed these, you know, abstract metaphysical ideals. You know, he focused on tradition, on these culturally, historically specific traditions and whatnot. You know, this was Burke's approach. At least this was Burke's approach in the Reflections on the Revolution of France, and that's the one work of his that's regarded as the classic statement of what's since come to be called conservatism. But you never hear anyone from National Review, on so-called conservative talk radio, on Fox News, you never hear anyone making any references to Kirk. Now, in part, I think that could have something to do with the fact that Kirk was what they would call an isolationist.
Yeah.
By and large, you know, Kirk came out against George H.W. Bush's invasion of Iraq back in the early 90s. Burke said to listen to I might botch his quotation here, but to hear a lot of these neoconservatives speak, you would think Tel Aviv was the capital of the United States.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, ouch.
Yeah, yeah. So Kirk really fell out of favor with these people. So you never hear Kirk mentioned. You never even hear Burke mentioned. I mean, very occasionally you hear, you hear, and this is no coincidence, I'm sure you'll agree, you'll hear these neocons quote Burke when they quote one line of his: "The only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing."
Yeah, it's attributed to him, yeah.
Right, and it's always quoted in connection with the war on terror, right? Or, you know, fighting what they call Islamists, or, you know, Michael Medved calls them Islamo-Nazis, you know. So, you know, so
right,
stuff
well,
like
let
this.
Me jump in, because there is one writer, and I can't remember his name, but I do believe contributed to the symposium, who actually a couple of years ago wrote a book on Burke versus Payne, in which he came out very sympathetically with Burke.
Oh, okay.
So there is at least that, but that is very much the exception, because of course the idea that the neoconservatives take for granted, that the United States is a propositional nation,
right,
dedicated to spreading human rights and global democracy, is so ludicrously at odds with Edmund Burke or conservatism or what any of the founding fathers thought, that of course they can't dare to let anybody actually read Burke.
Right, yeah, exactly right. Yeah, I was going to say, and we're in a, you know, and I don't deny that references to Burke have been made, but, you know, in this case, the exception proves the rule, really, because it is so exceptional that someone from this movement today would come out and spend time thinking at all about Burke. But yeah, but also, you know, it's not just that they're unfamiliar with the history of conservatism. I think it's also that when you look at their remarks now about Trump, and you juxtapose their contemporary remarks with positions that they've taken in the recent past, you see the inconsistencies. And again, you have to ask yourself, what does your conservatism even represent? Because it seems to have no real reference. It seems to be just a functional kind of term that you're using to ascribe to any position that you happen to be taking at the moment. And so that's why I think it's just a big mess. And what I was trying to do is use this symposium as an occasion to get a conversation going about the nature and meaning of conservatism. I thought it would be a nice opportunity to try to just inform readers that conservatism, in the original classical sense of that term, had no association with a lot of the views that are associated with it by neoconservatives today. And in fact, neoconservatism is actually the antithesis of conservatism as it's traditionally been conceived. In the first part of this two-part column that I wrote, I specifically reference Burke and Kirk, and I try to make the case that the neocons actually have a whole lot more in common with the radicals of the French Revolution, who Burke despised, than they have in common with Burke. You know, the French revolutionaries traded in these abstractions, you know, the rights of man and whatnot. And sounds eerily similar to what the neocons have to say today. You just referenced this about America being a propositional nation founded in a principle and so forth.
I want to give you a chance before we get going to say something about your new book, The American Offensive, Essays from the Front. Tell us what that's all about. I know what it's about, but tell us some of the this is basically what you've been writing over the years, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's The American Offensive, Dispatches from the Front. And it's available at Amazon. It's available through Barnes & Noble. It's Stairwell Publishing. It's just a collection of these essays that I've compiled over the last few years. The oldest essay is probably only about 3 years old. And I've addressed a whole range of issues. The book is it's not a long read, and you could read it any order that you like, but it's arranged thematically, and each chapter is devoted to a topic. You know, one chapter is on the academic industrial complex, i.e. higher education, the politicization of higher education, just some of the rot that you find there. Another chapter's on the mess that is our national immigration policy or no policy, whatever you want to call it. Then there's a whole chapter on race, and another on religion, particularly tensions between Christianity and Islam. And then there is a chapter on what you and I have been discussing for the last half hour, chapter on Republican Party neoconservative politics.
Well, that will also, of course, be linked to at tomwoods.com/580. Well, I love talking about this stuff, and I would love to keep on talking about it, but I want to keep this a manageable length, give people something to chew on. Of course, we have a debate coming up in a couple of days. We'll be doing a debate analysis here on the show. But, Jack, I'm glad to welcome you to the show for the first time, and I hope it won't be the last. Thanks a lot.
No, anytime. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Tom.
All right, do check out tomwoods.com/580, that's 580, so that you can read Jack's column for yourself. And what else do I want to say? Tomorrow I'm going to be doing the show by myself. Some of you folks like that. I don't know if there's people who don't, but I'm going to take an article and I'm going to take it apart and I'm going to do it all by myself with no guest. And I hope it'll be fun. I haven't done it yet, but I hope it's going to work out nicely. So if you like those episodes, then 581 is the episode for you. And don't forget, this Friday, we'll be doing another one of our post-debate episodes. Lou Rockwell and I will be reviewing the GOP presidential debate once again. So you'll definitely not want to miss that. Thanks for listening, everybody. TomWoods.com/580 is where you should go next. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.